I would like to inquire of the Senator from St. Genevieve.
Senator from St. Genevieve, do you yield? Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I know that you've put a lot of hard work in on this issue over the last year, certainly through the interim, and I appreciate your contributions to this bill. I wondered if you might have any comments or anything that you would like to add about this issue.
Well, as you were going through that, you've unloaded quite a bit of information on the folks today. But as I listen, and as I hopefully most folks listen, most of what you presented has been heard in some committee in one way or another. Is that not correct?
Yeah, it's actually a compilation of a number of different proposals throughout the legislature. In fact, 10 different members of the General Assembly in the House and the Senate are represented with their language in this bill.
Well, you know, the biggest concern that a majority in here has is just accepting Obamacare, straight expansion. That's been a concern in a lot of different ways. As a business owner, we've seen how Obamacare has had adverse effect on the business world and business community. We've also seen that it's been dumped on us in other areas. But we have to take a proactive approach in how we're going to deal with this. And one of our concerns is the cost. I was around here as a staff member in 2005 when we had to cut a lot of folks off the Medicaid programs and roll things back. We do not want to do something again that's not sustainable. So I guess one of the most important parts of your presentation, and I think really bears somewhat repeating, is how are we going to pay for this? How can it be sustainable? How can we make sure that if we put this program out here, we're not going to fall in the same kind of environment?
Right. That was the most important thing for me. And as we have had this discussion over the years since Obamacare was first passed, and we've talked about what's going to happen when this day arrives, I've been adamantly opposed to just straight taking the money and putting them into the Medicaid system and saying, okay, well, it's a great deal. We only have to pay 10%. That 10% is still unsustainable. That's still $200 million a year in general revenue that we don't have. Whether it's a good deal or not a good deal, you know, I often tell people, you know, there's a house in my district that's a beautiful house. You know, it's a $4 million. I think it was on the market for about $4.5 million. Beautiful house. And if somebody came to me and said, hey, you know, I'll give you this house. It's a great house, beautiful house, $4 million house. I'll let you live in this house, but after a few years, you got to pay me 10% of this house. That's a great deal. It would be a $4 million house for 400 grand. But guess what? I make 35 grand a year. I know I don't have 400 grand to accept that deal. And I think the state is in the same position. We have revenue that's lagging behind where we thought we were supposed to be. We don't have an extra $200 million sitting around, no matter how great the deal is. So by putting these protections in and saying, when that day arrives and we have to put up the match, it's not going to be on state general revenue, it's not going to be on the taxpayers, to me that's the most important part of this entire proposal.
And I think most of us agree that if we really had our druthers, we would rather have a block grant from the federal government so that we can determine how we want to manage our own health care in the state. But as we've seen, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has been imposed upon us, and as much as we would like to see it repealed, some of it's not going to happen.
Right.
And it's going to be a long time coming if we're able to do any of that. And just the example of the premiums that it's costing my company to continue to provide health care for my employees are going up at a drastic rate. And my carrier blames it because of the uncertainty of the Obamacare towards the future. One of the things that you mentioned is the donut hole. Those people are being provided for with what we call uncompensated care. They end up in the emergency room, the most costly way to have medical care taken care of.
Which then all of us end up paying for.
We all end up paying for it in higher rates through our health insurance coverage, which is one of the things that I'm referencing. We need to be proactive with how we handle our health care, and we've got to figure out a way to deal with that uncompensated care. And if you can, just explain a little bit more on how you fill the donut hole and how it's going to be paid for through the provider care. And have you had any resistance or any conversation or what are we going to find from the folks outside in the halls in falling back on providers' reimbursement rates used to pay for the difference?
You know, obviously it's not their first choice. You know, their first choice would be that we just take the money and pass it through and they don't have to have any investment in it whatsoever. But the reality is we're not in a position to do that. One, it's financially unsustainable. Two, the reality is the votes are not going to be there. I mean, we've voted against this straight expansion. I don't know how many times. I've lost track now on how many times. That would be their first choice. But the way that I look at it is, look, this money is going to flow through and end up in the healthcare providers in their networks. It's going to financially benefit them. It's about $2 billion when it's all said and done. If I'm having to make the decision, do I want to keep pushing for the $2 billion while getting zero, and probably getting zero for a long, long time, or will I take 1.8? I'm going to take 1.8. So while it's not their first choice, it's certainly preferable to continuing down the path we're on with the uncompensated care that they have to deal with every year and the increasing burden that's being put on them, while the federal funds, by the way, in the Obamacare law are being cut to them. There are cuts. We often hear, well, the cuts have been delayed, right? The Medicaid dish cuts have been delayed. But that's only one part of a three-legged stool. The Medicare dish cuts are moving forward, and the sequestration cuts are moving forward. And that's about $300 million a year to Missouri hospitals this year. And it's going to continue moving forward, and it's only going to get worse once those Medicaid dish cuts trigger. So when they're looking at that and how are they going to remain financially viable, they will definitely put a little bit of risk into the pool and say, we'll help cover the costs if the fund is insufficient, rather than just continue down the path to financial ruin.
We were obviously disappointed when 739 didn't get any farther than it had so far this year. And obviously, there are some opportunities for savings in our current program as it is that will save the state a considerable amount of money, particularly taking managed care statewide. I think you classified it as health care homes, which we call coordinated care activities. We're seeing too many duplicative services going to our Medicaid folks, when if we had a health care home system or coordinated care, the care would be coordinated so that we're not providing those duplicative services and saving the state quite a bit of money. So those pieces that are in there from 739 are going to be a tremendous value. Again, my greatest concern, and I hope the body takes time to have the debate. We have to have the debate. We've got to get the discussion going on what is realistic, what's real about modifying, changing our Medicaid program, and what's rhetoric and what's political. And I think that's the time is now to have that debate, and I hope our colleagues take time to ask the hard questions and challenge you on some of these things that you're talking about as far as being able to fund and sustain a Medicaid program as you rolled it out. I think that's what's most important today.
Well, Senator, I think it's very important that we have this discussion. You know, certainly, and as you've alluded to before, there's the world that we wish we lived in, and then there's the world that we actually live in. And I think it's going to take legislators looking at this from the perspective of, we don't like it. We wish it wasn't this way. If we were in charge at the federal level, hopefully it wouldn't be this way. But we're not, and it is, and how are we going to deal with it? And I think that this is very important in moving forward in that debate. Thank you, Senator, for your inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Senator, thank you for the inquiry. I know that this is an issue which is important to you, one that I know that you've expressed some concern about discussing or moving forward to a vote on. I'd like to get your take on some of the stuff that's in this bill. I mean, a lot of it is stuff that you've authored, things that you've pushed for a number of years, and wanted to kind of get your take on some of that.
Well, it's not so much what you chose yourself to put into your bill. It's what you never discussed with me and left out of your bill. And so many important reforms that you did not put in that, you know, I would be very disappointed about.
Well, Senator, I did come to you a number of times and ask if you had read the proposal, and you told me that you had not. And I had asked if, you know, please get back with me. I presented everybody a hard copy a couple weeks ago with a letter that said if you have any suggestions for input, I would be happy to discuss those and entertain those. Did you respond to my letter?
Well, I think I told you that I'm not in favor of expanding Medicaid, and I told you why. And so it really doesn't matter if you're wanting to expand Medicaid, which is really your true intent here, then really I'm just not that interested.
Okay, so your major problem then is that we provide health care coverage up to 138% of poverty level.
Well, my major problem with your bill is that you expand health welfare. You put more people on welfare.
So putting more people on welfare.
I myself don't feel that that's what we need to be doing today.
Okay, so putting more people on welfare, that's the crux of the issue. That's the problem. Even if we're reforming
the
system.
I think it's the wrong thing to do here.
You think it's the wrong thing to do?
I think that there are a lot of market-based reforms that would bring down the cost of health care, some of which you put into your bill, many of which I put into the Senate Bill 847 that never got a hearing. You know, it's kind of unfortunate that we were never able to vet all of those ideas through a committee hearing.
Well, Senator, let me read to you some things out of a bill, and let me just get your reaction.
Really,
to
them. I mean, you don't need to do that for me. I just assume not.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, Senator. If I've got a bill here that's really intriguing to me, and I do have some questions for you about it. I have a bill here with language that talks about. Providing cost-sharing opportunities for Medicaid, providing health accounts, a health care account under Section 208.13.21.
Well, you know, back in 2007, we offered a program that was called Insure Missouri.
Right.
And
that's
Insure
what I'm reading
Missouri
out of.
Had similar kind of things in there, and... all we wanted at the time was to reform the CON process. So, and at that time, the Missouri Hospital Association refused. Obviously, they did an economic analysis, and they realized that the cost of losing their CON protection would more than outweigh the $100 million a year that they would get from, you know, the Insure Missouri. So it never came to pass. I've been studying this for several years.
And that's why I was reading through the bill that you offered a few years ago. So the Insure Missouri proposal, that was seeking a waiver from CMS under the current Medicaid proposal at a 60-40 match. That's kind of what the gist of the proposal was, and then you set up under the waiver who you would provide service to. And I'm looking here... on page 66 of that proposal, 5% of the individual's annual household income per year, if the individual has an annual household income of more than 200 and not more than 250% of the federal poverty level. So a few years ago, you were willing to expand access up to 250% of poverty level under a Medicaid program that was a 60-40 match.
Except I think maybe there are a little bit more... rules that you're not mentioning. You'd almost have to read the entire bill to put it into context.
Would it not have allowed people to participate in the program up to 250% of the poverty?
Well, I think it was initially supposed to be a shared program where the employer paid a third, the person paid a higher premium, and the state picked up a third. I mean, that was the initial...
But if the program itself is... welfare, as was mentioned a minute ago, and you're against putting people on welfare, why did you author a proposal that would have put more people on welfare than the one I've proposed?
Well, at the time, I thought that the proposal that we were bringing forth brought about some reforms into the healthcare market that would help to compensate for it.
Okay,
plus the dynamic of being in the House is totally different than the dynamic of being in the Senate, as you know.
So reforms reforms that I haven't included, like transparency? I mean, transparency's in there.
You didn't put true transparency into your bill. You put an alternate form of transparency into your bill.
I'm pretty sure we pulled it straight out of your bill, so which alternate form would
you prefer?
Well, you pulled
half of it out, but you didn't put the transparency of prohibiting... contractual provisions between providers and insurance companies. That's where the true transparency problem lies.
And was that in your proposal back a few years ago?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, so a few years ago you were willing to go up to 250% without those, but now you're not... But yet you're criticizing me for not putting it in my bill either?
If what your point is trying to do is to show an inconsistency in my thought, I mean, go for it.
Okay, so if you could explain to me why it's okay to go up to 250% a few years ago and not 138% now when you would have been paying 60% or you would have been paying 40% a few years ago.
Well, obviously,
I would love you doing
that. You know, Senator, that the fiscal note on that proposal from several years ago was like $230 million.
Yes,
you
your
do know that. So there's no possible way
dollars.
That a $230 million fiscal note could cover everybody up to $250% of the poverty level when it takes $2.2 billion today to cover people up to only 138%. I mean, there's just no way. You're talking about apples and oranges. There is no comparison.
Well, according to the fiscal note of that bill, you would have added 201,187 people to Medicaid at 60 million GR annually.
Yeah,
you were okay trying to add 200,000 people to Medicaid.
At a 60-40 match compared to $2.2 billion. Okay. I mean, these are apples and oranges comparisons.
Okay, so let me ask you about some things that we've done more recently. You're a doctor. Do you see Medicaid patients?
Not anymore.
Not anymore? But you did see Medicaid patients at one time? Or
I used to be the only provider in the county. Well, myself and my current partner.
Okay,
we see Medicaid patients. I mean, we practically all of our whole entire population of patients was Medicaid.
Did your partner still see Medicaid patients?
60 or 70%. No, we can't afford it.
Can't afford it. So increasing provider rates to incentive doctors to see Medicaid patients, that's probably a good thing, right? I mean, that's...
Well, I've been fighting for increased reimbursement now for 12 years. And in fact, I've managed to get a little bit of an increase here and there.
Actually, we put in $26 million this year out of the ACA for that very purpose.
Right. And see, the thing about it is that your proposal would pay providers at 120% of the Medicare level, which I know to be a fact because I asked the director of the department in the Appropriations Committee. And while all of those people that are on the current Medicaid program, their providers would only get 65% of Medicare. That doesn't seem very fair to me. In fact, it sounds to me like it would create a two-tiered healthcare system.
So, but you're okay taking money out of Obamacare to increase provider rates for doctors, which we did this year, $26 million.
Well, I mean, to say that I would encourage the state to put more money into to match up and draw down under the current Medicaid program to pay providers fairly for the existing population, I would say that if you're going to take care of people, you ought to at least pay a living wage.
Okay, so then does that explain why you supported expanding Medicaid to adults for dental this year, which is something that was cut back in 2005?
Well,
we put $45 million into expand Medicaid for those people.
In fact, in 2006, when I handled the Medicaid reform bill, I negotiated with then-Senator Shields and drove to an agreement to include dental in 208.152 so that it would be possible to cover it. And unfortunately, since that time, we have not been able to fund it.
Okay, but this year, people who didn't have dental services before through welfare, now we have funded at $45 million. So we've, in essence, we've provided more welfare to people this year using Obamacare money. Is that
well,
right?
Well, you understand that, Senator, you and I have a basic disagreement in philosophy. And my philosophy is that, you know, it is the duty of our citizens to take care of those who cannot take care of themselves. And that's what our Medicaid population, except for the able-bodied adults that are on the program, that's what we do. The children, the disabled people, the old people, we provide care for them because they can't provide it for themselves. And yes, while the cutoff level is arbitrary, we need to take good care of the people who are absolutely dependent on us. The little ladies in nursing homes, people who are disabled and unable to work. If we're going to be responsible for their medical care, that includes dental. And so, yes, I think that if we're going to provide it and we're going to take the responsibility for it, we need to, like, step up and pay for it.
Okay, so even though in 2005 you voted to cut those services, and this year you voted to restore them.
No, wait, 2005 I voted to cut those? I don't think so, Senator. I think that in 2005, before you were in the legislature, maybe.
I came in that year, Senator.
That year. Well, yeah, you came in a special election, didn't you? The thing is, I don't think you actually cast a vote on the actual reduction of Medicaid on what was that bill number? I can't remember now. But you didn't cast a vote. That's because I think you came in a special after that.
Correct. I was campaigning during the cuts.
Right. But the thing is that what we did at that time was we put Missouri on a much more sustainable financial path by reducing the eligibility for able-bodied adults from 85% down to then, I believe it was 22% of the federal level, which was the farthest we could remove them under federal law.
But then within 2 years, you tried to bump it up to 250%.
I don't think so. I think you're comparing apples and oranges. I think what you're talking about is a subset of people as compared to the large group that you're referring to now.
Well,
I just want you to know that as the chairman of the committee that handled that bill and being in the House, I think the dynamic was totally different, and ultimately that bill died.
Right. You proposed it, but we're not able to get it through. So in You also this year put $18 million back into rehab and specialty services that were cut in 2005, and we used Medicaid dollars, federal Medicaid dollars, for that. So I'm just trying to understand how, on one hand, you had a proposal that went far beyond what mine does. But now mine
it didn't
is the
go far beyond what yours does, Senator.
It went over 100% above
yours
poverty.
Yours wants
from
to
where
spend $2.2 billion of federal money,
Senator. I mean, the reality is your bill, which I'm reading,
there's no possible way that
Senator, your bill, which I'm holding in my hand, went up to 250% of poverty level. That's so.
For did it go up to 250% of poverty level, Senator? For
Senator,
for all adults, did
Senator,
it?
Your premise of this
tell
entire
me,
discussion
me, you just
was
got
adding
saying,
people to welfare is a problem.
Well, Senator,
and now
Senator,
so that leads me to my next question, which is when we increased the asset limit this year, you had the amendment in the Senate Committee Substitute. You would take people who are currently not on Medicaid because they have too many assets, and you doubled the asset limit, therefore allowing more people to be put onto welfare. So
well, Senator,
how do you justify that?
Senator, let's back up. You just got done saying that in 2007, which was 7 years ago, that I proposed putting everybody up to 250% of the federal poverty level on Medicaid. Is that what you said?
I said that the bill that I'm holding in my hand allows people up to 250% of poverty level to have participation in a Medicaid program.
And what subset of people were allowed to have that, according to the bill that you have?
What difference does it make, Senator? If they were
that bill to the current bill,
I'm trying to understand where philosophy meets reality.
If
we don't put people on Medicaid,
if you want to compare, let's actually compare. You know, the populations. You want to put every adult up to 138% of the poverty level onto the Medicaid program. Every single one you want on there. That is not what I was doing in 2007.
Well, technically that's not accurate because they'd have to be between 16 and 65. I mean, over 65 is already on Medicare, but I mean, it doesn't matter which subset, this subset, that subset.
It matters a lot.
Your beginning premise was it is fundamentally against your philosophy to add people to welfare. I'm simply trying to understand why you presented a bill which would add 100% above the poverty level that I'm proposing to welfare.
Well, except that I didn't add that is.
Well, no, because it ultimately didn't pass. I'm asking why you proposed it.
I'm sorry, did you ask me a question?
I did. I asked why you proposed it.
Actually, I didn't propose it.
The fiscal note of the bill that you handled, which, by the way, passed out of the Senate, most people probably don't remember because of term limits, passed out of the Senate. Senator from Andrew voted for it. The former senator from Cape, Jason Crowell, voted for it. It cleared this chamber. by the way. But the fiscal note of that bill said it added 201,187 people to a Medicaid program. So if the fundamental philosophy is we do not add people to welfare, that that's not beneficial, why did we have a bill that was supported by some of the most conservative people in this chamber, that was carried by yourself, that was a House version, I think, was sponsored by former Representative Irvin, who is, by all accounts, an extremely conservative person, that would have added 201,000 people to Medicaid, according to the fiscal note?
Well, Senator.
All right, Mr. President, I guess I'm not getting an answer to that question. So with that, you know, I think that there are some people in this body that measure themselves by how many bills they've killed on time on this floor. I don't count myself in that group. I understand that no matter what I do here today, no matter what I say, no matter how long I talk or explain points or go down this, that, or the other, there are some individuals in this chamber that are going to stand up and talk longer. And the longer we stay on that, the more other people's priorities are going to die. Because as we run out of time and the clock winds down, there's not going to be time to address those other priorities. So with that, Mr. President, I am not going to play how many bills can I kill today talking about Medicaid, and I withdraw my amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.